This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we hear about some good news in the midst of the shutdown, how communities are working together, and also how this crisis has led to at least a temporary halt in abortions in Texas. We'll also hear about how local governments are reacting to a new statewide order and why you might need to hold their feet to the fire. We're joined this week in our interview by Rob Hennecke, Texas Public Policy Foundation, to talk about the legality of some of these local orders. And we'll close with a commentary from Empower Texans' Daryl Frost. Welcome back, friends, to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find us on the internet at www.texasscorecard.com. Follow me on social media at TweetTonyMac. I want to see what I have to say on there. But let's hear from somebody else. Let's talk to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Jacob, you've been helping spearhead our new life section, which was released in February, I guess. And it's really kind of come in handy lately because it's given us the ability to cover some good news for a change.
That's right, Tony. You know, amid all the chaotic headlines across the nation, there's so many people in need here across the state, but there's also so many people right here at home ready to help. And we have all kinds of stories on our website highlighting the amazing things that people are doing in their local communities amid this virus.
Yeah, so obviously we've got this crisis that's going on, and you know our mantra is, as conservatives, is to believe that solutions kind of start in the community with individual responsibility. Obviously, there's all these government bailouts and programs, but that's money 3 months from now, right? People need help from their neighbors today, and I've actually been really excited to see some of these stories showing these kind of good things that people are doing in their communities to actually fulfill their role as citizens.
Oh, definitely, Tony. We have some great stories. Like in North Texas, there's one restaurant named the Mud Hook Bar and Kitchen, which has given away hundreds of free burger and fry specials to school kids, as well as kind of turning their storefront into a makeshift grocery market where they're providing all kinds of fresh produce and other things like toilet paper and hand sanitizer. There's other examples like a community food bank in North Texas in Fort Worth who's giving away boxes of foods, complete with meats and canned goods and dry goods to folks there. And then, get this, Tony, there's also a group of Chinese American friends and neighbors in North Texas who got together just last week, and they raised over $90,000, bought FDA-approved protective gear, and delivered thousands of supplies to local hospitals all in a matter of days.
Yeah, it's been kind of inspiring, these stories. I think this is what people need, right? They hear enough news about things that are, doom and gloom, but the reality is life goes on, communities work together. I'm excited about this, and just encourage you to keep up the good work, and listeners, go check it out, texasscorecard.com. There in the life section, lots of stories about how communities are coming together. Thanks for your work on that, Jacob.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn and talk to Aaron Anderson up in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. You know, the governor is now out with a new executive order basically standardizing the rules for essential businesses, for travel, for gatherings statewide, and it supersedes conflicting local ordinances, specifically now saying churches are essential services, so freeing churches from certain local restrictions. But you're kind of following what's going on there in the Metroplex, and there's a tale of two counties, how Collin County and Dallas County are reacting to this. And I guess the punchline, the lesson, the takeaway is folks are really going to have to hold their elected officials' feet to the fire because you're seeing very divergent action, at least so far, in the reaction of locals to this new executive order.
Well, that's right, Tony. And in Collin County, a day before Governor Abbott announced his new statewide rules, which take effect April 2nd, Collin County had met to extend the current order that they had in place, which they called a stay-home, work-safe order, because while ordering everyone to stay in place except for essential activities, Collin County defined all businesses as essential and really encouraged them to stay open if they could within safety guidelines. Well, that was very different than the order issued down in Dallas County by Judge Clay Jenkins. So on Monday afternoon, County Judge Chris Hill did extend the current order that was in place, and he made a good point. He says, look, we really expect to figure out for themselves what is safe and to make common sense decisions for themselves in their community. Of course, a day later on Tuesday, the governor issues his statewide order, which will supersede the local orders, and Judge Hill then rescinded that order, and so the statewide order is going to be what's in effect. Now, Judge Jenkins down in Dallas responded by saying he felt that his county's order already complied with the new statewide order, and they were going to plan to extend it when they meet on Friday when his order expires. So a little different responses between those two counties.
Yeah, so basically Collin County saying, okay, it supersedes, so we're going to kind of get out of the way. Dallas County saying, oh, no, this isn't inconsistent at all. I think the lesson in all of this, you did some good stories about Derek Baker, an activist there in Collin County, who was dealing with the similar kind of conflict between the city of McKinney and the Collin County order. And, you know, they went to court and kind of pushed back and fought back with the local governments, and they kept customizing and changing the orders. It's going to have to be a Derek Baker kind of thing, wherever everybody's at, to ensure that the local governments don't just ignore this executive order from the governor.
And that's right, Tony. And as Judge Chris Hill said, if people really need an elected official to tell them how to act, we're in trouble.
That is absolutely a good point, Aaron. Now, let's turn and talk to Brandon Waltons, managing editor for Texas Scorecard, to talk about some other really good news. And this is some very serious good news. One of the side effects of these orders that the governor has put out has been at least a temporary halt to abortions in Texas. And some are looking at this saying, wait a second, this may save more lives than are being lost to the coronavirus.
That's right. You had Governor Greg Abbott come out and issue an executive order banning all non-essential medical procedures, right? The idea behind that being to shore up resources to fight the, you know, Chinese coronavirus and make sure that, you know, the masks and the hospital beds and all can be properly allocated to that. Well, you had the Attorney General, Ken Paxton, come in and say, this applies to abortions as well. Abortions, of course, an elective procedure would definitely fall under this ban. And, you know, there's many folks that are pointing out, I mean, you look at the numbers of people that have died because of the coronavirus, and you've actually got more lives saved right now because abortions aren't taking place in Texas.
Yeah, this order stays in place through the end of April. I think we were looking at the calculation earlier. You're looking at approximately 4,500 lives saved.
Yeah, thousands of lives, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the abortion industry not reacting very well to this. They go to court in Austin and had an initial victory there, but the litigation goes on.
Yeah, Planned Parenthood and some other abortionists, big abortion mills in Texas, filed a lawsuit, took to a district judge in Austin, Lee Yackel, who temporarily lifted the ban, said, you know, we got to look at this, you know, essentially, you know, some folks pointed out, I guess, you know, churches are closed, but abortion mills must stay open no matter what, right?
Yeah, it's the one constitutional right, even though it's not there. This is our top, most important enshrined right in the Constitution, according to, you know, the abortion advocates, is, of course, you can never do anything that interferes with abortions.
And it wasn't a surprise, too, if you looked at the judge. This is the same judge who struck down restrictions on a Texas law several years ago, folks remember, in 2013, that would have required abortionists to have hospital admitting privileges. That was, of course, the law that, you know, Wendy Davis infamously filibustered. So no surprise that he ruled in favor of abortion in this case. The big surprise, I think, was the turnaround on how fast the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals came in and actually undid, at least temporarily, his ruling. So For now, as it stands, abortions are not happening in Texas.
Yeah, well, it's there's always good news, and that's some serious good news and a silver lining in the midst of everything that everybody is facing right now. So I appreciate you covering that, and we'll definitely keep an eye on it.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, we're in the midst of a coronavirus shutdown, a crisis that is affecting the country and affecting the state, not just a health crisis, but certainly an economic crisis and arguably a crisis caused by government. I wanted to talk about that with Rob Henneke with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Rob, you're out just, I guess, this last week with a editorial talking about some of the flaws in what we're seeing in these stay-at-home orders, specifically the Travis County City of Austin order. You're saying, look, they need to throw this thing out and start over either one way or another.
Well, we do. Tony, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on. You mentioned in your intro that we're in the midst of this shutdown. And what strikes me is, I guess it depends from your viewpoint. I mean, if you're one of the tens of thousands of workers, small business owners, if you work for a restaurant, if you work for a gym, if you work for a number of small businesses, yeah, you're shut down.
Anybody
if you look out your window,
anybody who's deemed not essential, right?
But if you look out your window and the Green Belt is packed with people and Zilker Park is full of people having, you know, a great time and everyone's driving around and Walmart's full of people and, you know, you kind of wonder why they aren't shut down if you're the one that lost your job because of this. It really is a disconnect that shows that the way that cities and here specifically the city of Austin has responded to this is flawed in its approach, enforcement, and implementation. And I think it's really unnecessarily causing harm to tens of thousands of people. It's going to take a long time for us to recover from.
Now, let's talk for listeners who maybe aren't paying direct attention to what's going on in Travis County. Let's talk a little bit about what the order is, because it's pretty common relative to other major urban areas in the state. You have orders that are like this, where people are told to stay at home, told to shut down, but then there are lots of exceptions. And you've kind of pointed out lots of ways that these things are really kind of practically unenforceable.
Well, right. I mean, this is strikes me as another effort by Mayor Adler and the city of Austin, Travis County, to, you know, have their cake and eat it too. On the one hand, you know, it looks like they're, quote, doing something by issuing this order that you know, orders people to shelter in place and, you know, forces all of these businesses to close. But on the other hand, the order itself has all of these exceptions and loopholes and ambiguities. And also you see that it's not actually being enforced by the city of Austin, that it's largely toothless. And so it just begs the question for the city, which is it? I mean, if on the one hand, the city, based on the data that it has, believes that, you know, Austin is about to be what, you know, New York City currently is, or what we're seeing across the ocean that's happening in Europe, that kind of Italy crisis, well, goodness, shut it down. Take, you know, enforce your order, take the action necessary to protect the public, which is not being done today. If you just look at all the traffic and people circulating among the city, or if that's not what is expected to be the case here in Austin, then the city needs to withdraw its order and put something back in effect that takes, you know, takes pressures off of businesses and is less draconian in restrictions on civil liberties. But it's, right now, there's that disconnect between the two.
Yeah, it seems like there's, you know, there's the law abiding or the ultra law abiding, those who, you know, look at the order, they say, okay, I want to do everything I can to participate. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they're really harmed by this. But then if there isn't actual cooperation across the board, well, then it really doesn't necessarily accomplish anything other than, you know, kind of self-harm in that way. And it's interesting, too, as I look at it, the politicians come out with orders and they announce that this is the way things are going to be. And then a couple days later, when there's really been no material change in circumstances, no real new data, no real new information, they come along again with a more burdensome regime and then put it out there on people. And those who seek to comply. But it seems like it's this race by the political leadership to say, okay, we can't be seen as not doing everything possible. And so if one city, you know, shuts things down in a certain way, well, we have to follow suit and shut them down in an even more aggressive way. But again, at the same point, to your point, they don't really have a mechanism to enforce these things.
But they're not trying. I mean, they have, you know, law enforcement. I mean, goodness, the city of Austin has 13,000 employees that, you know, they could task to help me to, you know, encourage people to comply. And that's where, you know, really Austin is trying to let itself off of the hook on this. That, to your point, Tony, they issue these orders that, you know, for businesses and individuals that comply with the law are, you know, on paper very limiting. But then the city doesn't actually want to be unpopular by making people comply with that. And so, you know, they're allowing non-enforcement, which is sending the message to the public that, hey, this really isn't that big a deal, which I think is very unfair. And I'm very sympathetic for the tens of thousands of people who have suddenly lost their job and are worrying about paying rent, paying for groceries, paying their bills, and wondering why the city put them out of work if everyone else is going to be able to go on to their daily lives without any kind of interruption, because Austin's not actually going to do what it said.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the interesting things here is, you know, there are certain provisions of state statute that give authority to the governor and give authority to local governments in disaster declarations. And it seems like at points, these local government officials are relying on some of that authority, but then at other points, they're kind of making it up as they go along. And all of this is really highly questionable from a constitutional standpoint in terms of, you know, shutting down churches, for instance, and restraining people's liberty. Generally, these things are supposed to be accepted from the powers of government. So we've had all of this going on, and it's not clear that they even have this authority or that we've ever really thought through as a state how we would want government officials to wield this type of authority. And maybe with good cause, there isn't the authority because, you know, as we're seeing, it isn't really working.
I mean, there is the constitutional framework on this. Certainly, we're in largely unprecedented territory with what's going on. But in other contexts, you know, what we're talking about here, Tony, is we're talking about curtailment and restriction on fundamental rights, rights to worship, right to assemble, right to speak, rights of association, rights to keep and bear arms. And the case law has always been that when government seeks to restrict those rights, which in some circumstances it can, but the scrutiny on those decisions is going to be at the highest level, and that government is only allowed to infringe upon those type of fundamental civil liberties if it has a compelling governmental interest and the way that it acts is both narrowly tailored and least restrictive. And that latter part is what really concerns me about the way that Austin and other cities are implementing these. I think, and the case law backs it up, that public health crises have been held to at least conceptually, be serious enough to give rise to a compelling governmental interest. But it's how the government acts that can still be unconstitutional within that framework. And here, the question is Austin acting in a least restrictive and narrowly tailored manner? And there's a serious question about that, especially given the non-enforcement of its own order, which suggests that it itself doesn't even believe that the power that it's purporting to exercise is really necessary at this time.
Yeah, I agree with that, because as you see them go through, it's like, okay, if they can tell a church to close, but then but the liquor stores are essential businesses that have to stay open. I think there's no real more extreme example than that of this, not just that the orders aren't narrowly tailored, but also that there just isn't due process and that it's arbitrary. Everything, all the decisions are the decisions that they choose to make based on their own values, as opposed to something that's more concrete or universal.
Well, that's right. I mean, look, near my neighborhood, I know that the mattress store is still open, because they claim to be, a provider of residential goods. You know what? We can probably get by a few weeks without needing to buy, new mattresses. But, if the point of these business closures is to keep people from coming together, in close proximity to each other, then, standing next to someone in the aisle of the liquor store, the mattress store, is no different than standing next to someone in the pew at your church or your place of worship. And to your point, you're exactly right. We need to have, fair and equal treatment of that. And I think, a further justification of the need for there to be any limitation forced by government on business, under the current circumstances. The city has not made the case, and they're not trying to do so, under the current situation.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I have cautioned folks that I've talked to. I see these as being highly suspect from a constitutional standing. But, the courts have traditionally been pretty poor protectors of liberties in times of crisis. In times of war, you think of the free speech cases in World War I, where basically the Supreme Court would let anything go. You see the Korematsu case in World War II, where you have internment of Japanese citizens. Those are kind of the most high-profile examples, but there's many, many others. And so I kind of think, as a lawyer, I look at this and I say I'm a little skeptical that there's anything to be done, maybe yet. But certainly from an academic standpoint, it seems highly questionable.
You're right, Tony. There's been quite a number of, looking back in history, times where government has clearly overstepped its bounds and caused real harm to individuals. And, this may be yet another example for the history books. I hope not.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the hysteria kind of passes a bit, and it passes in both the, not just in the community, but also in the courts, and maybe everyone sobers up a little bit and takes a reasonable view of these things, and like you have. Tell folks, we're running out of time, tell folks at home who want to read your column about this issue, and then who want to connect with you at Texas Public Policy Foundation, tell them how they can connect with you.
Well, sure. My commentary is published on the foundation's website. It's entitled Austin's Shelter-in-Place Order is Flawed. And you can find that at texaspolicy.com, which is the website for the Texas Public Policy Foundation, texaspolicy.com. And also follow me on social media, Twitter, at Rob Henneke, for a lot of my day-to-day commentary on the legality and current events of what certainly is an unprecedented time for our state and nation right now.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you joining us, sharing some thoughts on this. I enjoyed your column, and appreciate the work you do over there at the foundation. Thanks.
Tony, thanks for all you do. Great to be with you. A great discussion today.
Hey there, Texas Scorecard Radio listeners. The world around us is shut down, and if you're like me, you find yourself with some extra time and you're looking for something to do. Well, we've got just the thing for you. The Jim and Michael Show every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. on the Empower Texans Facebook page. Join the conversation with Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan and Jim Graham from Texas Right to Life and discuss all the latest news from around the state, country, and the world. Whether they're discussing the latest shelter-in-place orders or simply sharing a Bible verse, Jim and Michael will keep you entertained and informed. Don't forget, the Jim and Michael Show every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. at www.facebook.com/EmpowerTexans.
Well, local officials are imposing a significant cost on businesses and taxpayers. The question is, will they share in the sacrifice? Daryl Frost touches on that in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
As Texans struggle, will local officials cut their own pay? Hi, this is Daryl Frost, data manager for Empower Texans, with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. With millions of Americans being ordered to stay home to combat the spread of the Chinese coronavirus, many businesses are experiencing an abrupt decline in revenue, if not an all-out stop. They're struggling to meet payroll and faced with difficult decisions about cutting staff. And that's having a devastating impact on Texas workers. You've seen the numbers. Last week, nearly 3.3 million Americans filed unemployment claims, more than four times the previous record from 1982. In Texas, there were more than 155,000 new claims for unemployment benefits, up from around 16,000 the previous week. To put those figures in perspective, weekly jobless claims in Texas have been averaging around 13,000 this year, and during the recession 12 years ago, they never topped 50,000. The latest figures from the Texas Workforce Commission show over 30,000 new claims being submitted daily. So far, despite closing in-restaurant dining and prohibiting gatherings of more than 10 people, Governor Greg Abbott has not instituted a stay-at-home order for all Texans, as the governors of at least 27 other states have. However, he explains in a recent press conference that counties and cities throughout the state could issue such orders if they determined it necessary, adding that he would applaud those that did. In response, officials in many of the state's largest population centers have done just that. As thousands of Texans lose their jobs and legislators begin to discuss ways to cut spending at the state level, local officials should be asked, what sacrifices are you making? Politicians are notorious for making decisions that don't directly affect them, but have a drastic effect on their constituents. If millions of Texans are forced to alter their routines and are restricted from working, to profound financial detriment in many cases, it's not unreasonable to suggest that reductions in pay should be on the table for those responsible. It's hard to argue they can't afford it. For example, Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, the first to issue a stay-at-home order in Texas, makes more than $171,000 a year. Next door in Tarrant County, Judge Glenn Whitley receives over $182,000 annually. And professional student slash political activist Lena Hidalgo, Harris County's top executive, is paid an eye-popping $190,861 salary. Across the state, six-figure salaries abound for officials who have ordered their constituents to stay home. It's time for those who are making these decisions, right or wrong, to sacrifice along with the rest of us. Will they do so by cutting their own pay? Only if you demand it and hold them accountable. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Daryl Frost.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. Make sure you never miss any news you need to know as a taxpayer by subscribing to the Texas Scorecard Radio podcast, available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, all those podcasting platforms. Thanks for listening, and stay safe out there.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.